Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And as always, so good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. So don't forget about that. Well, today we are going to visit with Matt Feitner. He's the Regional Vice President of the National Accounts for Clean Energy Fuels. And he's pretty fascinating because natural gas is America's second largest energy resource next to coal. And in addition to having plenty of it, natural gas is a cleaner and a cheaper alternative to gasoline and diesel transportation. Matt is going to be speaking at the 4th Annual Green Technologies Conference, the IEEE conference going on in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the 19th and 20th. Of April, coming up here in a little bit. You hear us talk about that a bit on this program. There's a news story that you've been hearing probably a lot lately about fracking, getting natural gas out of the ground, and worries about contaminating groundwater, and also causing earthquakes. These are some of the stories we've had. And we've had to ask Matt about that. And in the meantime, there's a report coming out of the U.K., about fracking. Incidentally, fracking uses high-pressure liquid pumped deep underground to fracture a shale rock and release gas. And that's how we're getting our natural gas. But in a copyrighted story, the UK Press Association reports United Kingdom geologist says it's extremely unlikely, that's a quote, extremely unlikely, the groundwater supplies would be polluted by methane as a result of fracking. And certainly it is controversial. He's Professor Mike Stevenson of the British Geological Survey, but he says we don't have anything to worry about. He says most geologists thought it was a pretty safe activity, that's another quote, and the risks associated with fracking are low. Anyway, we're going to ask Matt Feitner about that a little later on in the program when we get to him, so we've got a lot of exciting things going on. We're also going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of. And today, a fascinating parallel on prohibition from the 1920s and the drug war today. We're going to visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's step into our very busy international newsroom we have here at the studio of the Science News Radio Network and see what the reports are coming in from around the world. The University of California, Santa Barbara geochemist David Valentine and his colleagues published a study early last year, you might remember, that documents how bacteria blooms had consumed almost all the deep water methane plumes following the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in 2010. Well, a lot of us have been pretty skeptical. You know, how in the world could all the lethal gas emitted from the Deepwater Horizon well just kind of disappear? Well, there's a new study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences explaining the role of bacteria in consuming more than, get this, 200,000 metric tons of dissolved methane. The study is published also in the Journal of Sciences. And this is an interesting one here. Ann Trafton of the MIT News Office has a nanotechnology story for us. It seems the Massachusetts Institute of Technology engineers have developed a nanoscale biological coating that can halt bleeding nearly instantaneously. Wow, I mean, that's an advance that could be dramatically improve survival rates, I would think, for soldiers injured in battle. The researchers are led by Paula Hammond, according to the story, and funded by MIT's Institute of Soldiers Nanotechnologies and a Denmark-based company created a spray coating that includes a clotting agent found in blood. A nanotechnology story about a clotting agent found in blood. And sponges can be coated with the material and be stored stably and easily carried by soldiers or medical personnel. So let's step out of the noisy newsroom now and get on to today's guest. Well, on this program, of course, we talk a lot about alternative energy, and natural gas is America's second largest energy resource next to coal.
Stand by.
And in addition to its abundance, of course, natural gas is a cleaner and cheaper alternative to gasoline and diesel for transportation. We have with us on the phone today Matthew Feitner. He's the Regional Vice President of National Accounts for Clean Energy Fuels Company. And Matt, welcome to the program.
Colonel, thanks for having me.
Now, I might understand, last time we talked before the interview, you were talking about opening up 150 alternative fuel stations soon. Is that still the number?
That still is the number, and we're on target to have those 150 stations operational within the next 24 to 36 months. It's you know, when you consider it, it's a historical event. Nobody else has ever tried to do anything of this scale before, but at Clean Energy, we're trying to tackle it and trying to make it a reality.
What you're doing is making it easier then for fleets of these large rigs, transportation rigs, and well, really for anybody that wants to convert to natural gas, be able to travel the highways and be able to not have to worry about refueling. Is that the point?
That is exactly the point. So one of the main opportunities, if you will, by considering, you know, to run a Class 8 tractor on natural gas, the question is, where the heck am I going to fuel the thing? And so we at Clean Energy are endeavoring to answer that question so that it's no longer an issue. So once we have our network complete, the intent is for a fleet to be able to travel coast to coast, border to border, with little or no planning, just like they do today. I don't think much thought is given to where in the heck am I going to fuel my diesel truck today. And in the future, we anticipate that you're going to have the same environment with natural gas. So the stations we're planning on putting them between 250 and 300 miles apart, so you have a comfortable distance and range for these truckers to be able to fuel their vehicles.
All right, and then these are going to be, what, existing stations that are already selling gasoline and diesel fuel? Is that it?
Yeah, well, we've got a strategic partnership with Pilot Flying J. I'm sure your constituents are probably familiar with those truck stops. They're the largest truck stop operator in the United States. They've got over 500 locations. And so we entered into an exclusive arrangement with them where we're putting our natural gas fueling lanes on their existing truck stops. And that way, you know, we don't have, it's a great deal for us because it helps lower our cost to market, where we don't have to recreate a lot of the amenities that exist at these truck stops, the foods, right, the showers, the parking, all of that exists. And Pilot Flying J has been a wonderful partner of ours. They're a big fan of what we're trying to do. And so we felt to really make a big splash and make it quickly, that entering into a strategic partnership with a company like Pilot Flying J was the way to go, and that's what we've done.
So it's not just the big rigs that'll be able to fuel up at these stations, but I could convert my Jeep Cherokee to natural gas, I guess, and fill up there too.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. So there's two different methods of storing natural gas on a vehicle in order to get the range that, you know, you and I are accustomed to, either with our light and medium duty vehicles or a heavy duty truck. So you can compress it in a gaseous state, we call that CNG, or you could liquefy the natural gas and hold it as a liquid on a vehicle. It's a cryogenic liquid. Mm-hmm. Now, for the light and medium duty applications, like the trucks that are the vehicles that you and I drive every day, CNG is the preferred methodology to store that natural gas on the vehicle. Now, for heavy duty vehicles, liquefied natural gas is really the best application. It helps increase the range of the trucks, and it also doesn't add any weight to the vehicles. When you compare a natural gas tractor to a 2010 or newer diesel tractor, there's no weight addition, which is very, very important to these carriers. You start talking about impacting their payloads in terms of decreasing them, you're taking money out of their pockets, and mm-hmm. that's never a good thing. So with regard, why that's important with regard to the context of your individual conversion, not all of our Pilot Flying J stations will have both fuels, okay? They primarily will have LNG as a trucking fuel, and where we have a business case to make the incremental investment, we'll add CNG. So we'll make CNG from the LNG. So some of the Pilot Flying J centers that are closer to large metroplexes that maybe have a regional refuse fleet or a regional a beverage distributor. I'm just thinking of some of the various businesses that we deal with. And they're willing to commit enough volume and are interested in a particular location, we will make that incremental investment for the Pilot Flying J's. Now, I will tell you that we've got over 280 public natural gas fueling stations nationwide, and almost all of those are primarily CNG that would support folks like you and me.
All right, I'm trying to picture this then. Now, the liquefied natural gas, I guess what you have to do is, gas is a gas, and to make it liquid, you gotta compress it, and so it comes out like gasoline from a nozzle and a pump. Is that what I envision?
Oh no. Yes. The liquid does come out of a nozzle just like gasoline or diesel, but it's important to note that by the time the gas gets into the combustion chamber for a spark ignition, it is in a gaseous state.
Okay.
And is not compressed. So if you had an engine that happened to be on a vehicle, a CNG vehicle, by the time that gas gets into the combustion chamber, it's not going to be under a lot of pressure. So it's fair to say the engine doesn't know the difference if you're an LNG vehicle or you're a CNG vehicle. It's two different methodologies of storing the fuel on the vehicle so you get an appropriate range. Now, when I fill up, I drive a pickup that's a dedicated natural gas vehicle. I pull up to one of our public stations, and I fill my CNG tanks from a public fueling island that is a little bit different than filling up with gas, but I can tell you, my wife does it, so anybody can do it. Liquefied natural gas is just a little bit different. It's a closed system. There's a locking mechanism that locks onto the tank before fuel flows. Understand, it's a cryogenic fluid. It's negative 260 degrees, so if you got any on you, it might leave a mark. But it's a closed system. It's impossible to spill it. We've got a very, very good safety record. But it does look and feel a little bit different than the fuels that you and I are accustomed to and that we've grown up with.
Now, Matt, I gotta ask you if your wife is going to be listening to this program, because you just said that your wife can do something, and that means anybody can do it, and she might not like that a whole lot.
She's a good sport.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. All right. So, and of course, even with gasoline, it enters the combustion chamber as a gas and not a liquid, because it gets atomized before it goes into the combustion chamber. So I can fully understand that. The difference though is one is compressed natural gas and the other is liquefied natural gas. And how are those two substances different from each other? You would think compressed natural gas is is still a gas, but liquefied natural gas is really a liquid. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's correct. And so let's talk about, so the compressed natural gas is a little bit easier to understand, right? So it stays a gas the entire time. It's just compressed.
Okay.
There's no fuel pump necessary. You just have a regulator that lets gas through the fuel line using the pressure that's in the tank to push it forward, right? That's pretty easy to conceptualize. Now, liquefied natural gas is a little bit different. So once liquefied natural gas leaves the fuel tank, it heats up and flashes back to a gaseous state and finds its way into the combustion chamber. So liquefied natural gas, just, you know, conceptually, the way it works, just a little bit different than the compressed form.
All right, well, these truckers now, as you mentioned before, they don't want to add any more weight, but they don't want to lose any mileage either. And gasoline, as I understand it, has been the best for the energy, and that natural gas isn't quite as good. So what kind of mileage are they losing?
Well, it's really a method of combustion. So natural gas is no less powerful than diesel. So a gallon of, let's talk about energy for a minute. So a gallon of diesel is actually, it has more, has a higher BTU content than a gasoline liquid gallon. So gasoline's got 125,000 BTUs. A diesel gallon has 139,000 BTUs. So that's okay. Probably the power that you're talking about.
Okay.
Now, when we sell our fuel, clean energy, we sell it in gasoline gallon equivalents, or GGE, and we also sell it in diesel gallon equivalents, DGE, so that our truckers know that they're getting the same energy content that they had in their diesel engine. Now, to the topic of power that you brought up, it is fair to say that there is a mileage, miles per gallon, detriment on the natural gas side, but almost all of it is due to the method of combustion. Everybody knows that diesel engines don't require a spark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a compression ignition.
Okay.
The fuel gets in the chamber, valve closes, the piston moves up, compresses the gas, and it ignites. Natural gas doesn't have those properties, just like gasoline. When you compress it, it just gets smaller. So natural gas, a true, dedicated, 100% natural gas engine requires a spark ignition, and there's a little bit of energy loss. So we tell people to expect, about a 5% to 7% decrease in miles per gallon natural gas over diesel. Now, that gets lost in the rounding on a cost equation because the economics for natural gas versus diesel are so compelling.
Oh, in other words, you're saying that natural gas is so much less expensive per BTU than diesel. But then to convert these big rigs from diesel to natural gas, you got to take the motor out. You got to put in a spark plug. Is that right?
Well, what we do, you can convert existing vehicles to natural gas. Well, the advice that Clean Energy gives its customers is buy brand new, purpose-built OEM natural gas tractors. Okay, so all of the manufacturers make them, from Volvo, both pack car companies, Peterbilt and Kenworth, Freightliner, Navistar's got them. They all make OEM products. So buy one new, and to the degree that you want to bring natural gas tractors to your fleet, make them a part of your regular replacement cycle. All right, so if you're replacing 10% a year, typically what most of our customers will do is a portion of that 10% a year that they're replacing, they buy natural gas tractors. We just think we've got customers that have done both, that have repowered or converted trucks, and we've got customers that, do OEM. While we have customers that have had positive experiences with their converted trucks, the real best bet is to buy the OEM product.
All right, we're looking at an abundance of natural gas in this country, in the borders of the United States, is what I'm told. And if everybody converted it to natural gas, how long would this energy source last? Do you have any predictions on that?
Yeah, I do. It's and we speak to a lot of producers and geologists about this to help form our opinions. We are the Saudi Arabia of gas. I mean, nobody has as much gas as the United States, and I don't think a lot of people, know how enormous the supply is that we've got. It's really a blessing. Since 2009, the United States has been the largest global producer of natural gas. That's significant. I don't imagine a lot of people are aware of that.
Yeah.
So depending on who you talk to, you'll hear people start on the low end, well, we've got a 100-year supply. That's very, very low. What we generally tell people is there's a 150 and 200-year supply based on the current prices. And if you want to increase the cost of natural gas, because as technology evolves and gas gets a little bit more difficult to extract, you probably are going to add a dollar or two to the MCF. You could easily make an argument that we have 500 years of natural gas.
Wow.
At a certain price point. And I don't make that prediction lightly. It's based on when people today are talking about how much natural gas is in the United States, it's based on the assumption that we can only extract 45% of the known gas shale plays that we've got today. I am no geologist, but I can accept an intuitive argument that our extraction methodologies are going to improve over the next 200 years, and that 45% becomes 50, becomes 60. So you've got that component. We also haven't found all of these shales in the country. There's a lot more gas to be found, and we haven't even really started looking offshore. So, Colonel, what my advice to you and to anybody that's considering this is there's an extremely strong argument, whether you accept there's 200 years or 300 years, there's certainly more gas than we can use in our careers. And there's a very strong argument that the unbelievable low price of natural gas that we're enjoying today is probably going to continue for the foreseeable future.
And that's even considering that we are using natural gas to fire power plants. Is that right? I mean, we're replacing power plants, coal-fired plants, with natural gas plants. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, that's really where the large use of natural gas is place like power plants. Chemical companies, paper companies, anybody that's running a large boiler in their manufacturing process are large natural gas users. Their demand for natural gas just completely eclipses what, on the transportation side is going to use. But if we're able to convert a lot of our transportation over, we're really going to take a bite out of that imported oil, that OPEC. Let's talk about the economics here.
Yeah.
Just to kind of put it in the proper context so that your listeners can see what we're seeing.
All right.
So I checked the prices today of a barrel of oil and an MCF of gas. So today a barrel of oil is trading on the market, worldwide market, at right at $100. Okay? Everybody's
right.
Pretty familiar with that. Everybody can accept that. An MCF of gas is trading right now at $3.
Okay.
So in order to put that into an apples-to-apples comparison, if you want to talk about energy equivalents, So a barrel of oil has 5.8 million BTUs of energy.
Okay.
And MCF has 1 million BTUs of energy. So it's a very simple exercise. So 3 times 5.8.
Okay, Matt, I kind of see where you're going with this. You're showing us that for the same amount of energy with gas as compared to oil, that we are getting it a whole lot cheaper. And I'm going to want to really get into the specifics of that, and we don't have time here in the first half hour. So we want to come back at the second part of the program, and I want you to explain to us just how much difference there is right now for the same amount of energy with gas as there is with oil. And we'll be right back. After the break here at the half hour. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
The Happy Warrior look at the record. Prohibition has found a new line of endeavor for the underworld. They brought life to the bootleggers, and the bootleggers begot the hijackers, and the hijackers begot the racketeers. My friends in the radio audience, the only cure for the ills of democracy is more democracy.